Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, October the 22nd. There's a debate coming up tonight. We're not going to say much about the debate now because I want to see it first, but we're probably going to do a show on Friday about the debate. I'm trying to put together a show, trying to get more perspectives than just mine on the show. So let me work on that this evening and tomorrow morning, and we'll try to do a show on the debate. It's an important debate, I think, for President Trump because, look, he seems to be tightening the polls. If you look at the overall scheme of – if you look at the election, I mean, the big picture of the election is that the polls are tightening. Now, that happens a lot in elections. That's not unusual. But I think there's something going out there. And if you look at the intensity levels, I mean, like, there was a picture that I saw of President Obama speaking in front of a group of people. There was nobody there. The same thing with Kamala Harris. There was nobody there. Now, some people are going to say, well, that's because of COVID. Well, maybe. It could be. But look at the enthusiasm for President Trump everywhere he goes. I think that means something. Exactly if that's enough to win the election, I don't know. But back in 2008, remember all the comments we used to hear about the crowds that Barack Obama would draw? And clearly it was indication back then that there was enthusiasm for him. So we'll see. I'm not going to bank on just that alone. But clearly the polls are tightening. And if you look what they call the battleground states, there's no question that President Trump is within striking distance of a bunch of them. And then if you look at a couple of national polls, Rasmussen has it a 3-point difference. I think Trafalgar has it pretty much a tie. IBD has it pretty much as a tie. I mean, look, if it's within 2 or 3 points, Trump wins the Electoral College, and that's about as much as you can say. We'll talk more about the election next week. And we'll talk more about the debate on Friday. But today we're going to talk a little bit about the Senate Democrats and what an absolute collection of spoiled, just childish people they are. They had the confirmation vote today. This is part of the routine. You know, the Senate Judiciary Committee recommends a nominee for the Supreme Court, and they recommend the nominee to the whole Senate. It's a routine thing. The Judiciary Committee meets. At the moment, of course, because the Republicans have a majority, they have a majority 12-10 or 12-9 in the committee. So they voted to confirm or at least recommend Judge Amy Barrett to the floor for the Senate vote that will probably happen on Monday or Tuesday. But none of the Democrats showed up. I mean, isn't this silly? None of the Democrats show up for this vote. They're citing all kinds of silly reasons about how, well, they're breaking their word. I mean, they keep going back to Merrick Garland back in 2016, and now he never got a vote. He never got a hearing. Well, look, the real problem with the Democrats is that they need to be looking internally for what went wrong here. Back in 2014, then Majority Leader Harry Reid decided to change the rules in the Senate and bring it from 60 to 51, meaning from a supermajority to a simple majority, on how to put the 51, I should say, simple majority was all that was needed to put judges in all of the different courts across the country. Now, the reason the Democrats did it is because they wanted to put Obama nominees in the court. And look, that's reality. They had the majority. But the idea ran into a problem, and that is that the Republicans won the Senate in 2014. So the same rules that the Democrats created to put Obama people in the courts, now the Republicans are using it to put Trump people in the courts. And that's all what's happening. If Harry Reid, then Majority Leader, had not changed the rules, and by the way, a bunch of Republicans were telling him not to do it. A bunch of Democrats were also telling him not to do it because they thought that we could be in the situation we're in right now. But he did it anyway. And here's what we have. We have a situation where it only takes 51 to put a judge in, and that has been to the benefit of President Trump. The other big thing that they're angry about is, of course, the fact that Justice Ginsburg, rest in peace, died when President Trump was president. And many, many Democrats, privately, they won't say it publicly, but are really angry that the judge did not retire when President Obama was president in 2015. He could have easily replaced her with maybe not someone exactly like her, but clearly a lot more liberal, let's just say much more to the liking of Democrats than Judge Amy Barrett. But they didn't do it. They decided to gamble on the idea that Hillary Clinton was going to win the election. So what happened was that, of course, Trump won the election, and Trump is the one who has put now two and will soon be three judges in the Supreme Court. I mean, that's pretty historic. I mean, it's pretty historic to put two, pretty historic to put three. And if he's reelected, as I expect he will, you could be looking at four or five justices in the Supreme Court from President Trump. I mean, it's pretty historic. The last time I heard somebody put three judges in the court, the last time I heard three was, I think, President Eisenhower. And maybe President Reagan, although I'm not 100% about Reagan, but I am pretty sure about Eisenhower. So that's pretty significant when you can put that many justices in the Supreme Court, or one president can put that many justices in the Supreme Court. So that's what the Democrats are all upset about. And today, of course, they decided to put on a show and not show up for the confirmation hearings. Of course, it didn't matter because the Republicans had enough votes to pass it. So it was just a symbolic act of nonsense, really. That's all that it was. And, Judge Amy, as we are we call her here, Judge Amy. She's a wonderful lady. She's on her way to the Supreme Court, and she'll be there probably sometime next week. And that's the end of that story. Now, another big story today is this interview that President Trump had with 60 Minutes. Apparently, it didn't go well. President Trump was very angry at Leslie Stahl for the way she treated him. And he got so upset that he walked out of the interview, and now he has literally published his version of the interview, or the unedited version, on Facebook. I caught some parts of it, and there's no question that Leslie Stahl was rude, and there's no question that Leslie Stahl was aggressive and with President Trump in a way that she would never do to President Obama or even to Mr. Biden. And people at the media are going to have to figure out that you cannot continue to do this. You cannot continue to treat President Trump differently than you treat Obama. I mean, at some point, the media is going to have to figure out that, they're not asking any questions of Biden and Harris, who, by the way, are not answering any of their questions. I have a post about this over at the American Thinker today. Mr. Biden and Mrs. Harris have simply decided that they're not going to answer any questions. And apparently, nobody in the media cares. Nobody in the media cares to ask him about questions. Now, I understand that Leslie Stahl asked Mr. Biden about packing the Supreme Court, and he gave a completely idiotic answer by saying, well, if he's elected, he's going to name a commission. Well, that's not an answer. That's just another punt. And how did Leslie Stahl allow that to happen? I don't get it. I don't understand. She should be saying, well, you can't punt on this. You know, people need to know how you're going to decide this. And, I'm going to name a commission. Well, that's not an answer. That's just a way of avoiding the question. It is a very difficult question for Mr. Biden, because no matter how he answers the question, he loses. The overwhelming majority of the American people are opposed to court packing because they know that court packing would be a disaster for the United States. But on the other hand, the people who support it are the base that he made a deal with in order to get the nomination, the left wing of the party that is putting a lot of pressure on the party to change radically to the left. So it's a no-win situation for Joe Biden. He knows it. He knows that no matter how he answers the question, he's going to lose. And he keeps avoiding the question by, every time he's got a more silly answer. Well, I think it's an important question. And if you want to be president of the United States, I think you need to answer that question. Now, if you hate Trump, many people do, if you hate Trump and you think Trump has to be defeated at any cost, well, maybe you'll put up with that answer. I hope you understand, though, the consequences of packing the court, because they go beyond Trump. You know, when you're talking about packing the court, this has nothing to do with Trump or with Biden. This is changing the way we've done business in the United States for 250 years. And if you're willing to play, if you're willing to change the rules that much because you hate Trump, then I think you need to have a little self-examination and ask yourself, you know, am I really thinking correctly, or am I just so invested in Trump derangement syndrome that I'm willing to destroy the country and destroy the greatness of the country, which is the checks and balances that we have, just because I hate Trump? I mean, I don't know. I would never support Republicans packing the court. And that's because I understand what it means. It means the end of a independent judiciary, and that has always been, of course, one of the crowning achievements of the United States. It doesn't mean that the courts are always right, but at least they're independent, and that's something that, you know, I think the Founding Fathers clearly intended for that to be the case. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. This is Silvio Cantu in Dallas, Texas. Just a quick happy birthday here to Ichiro Suzuki, who turns 47 today. He was born in 1973. Ichiro is one of the greatest hitters of our generation. He came to the major leagues from Japan. He was, you know, he was older, an older ball player by the time he got to the majors. He was 28. By the time they got to the major leagues, which is usually, I mean, look, most players get to the majors when they're early 20s. But if you get to the majors when you're 28, it's unusual. That's not a typical major leaguer. But anyway, he got here at age 28 and really became one of the best hitters in the American League. I mean, the guy had an incredible command of the strike zone and just the way he handled the bat. I mean, he's just a magnificent player. He got 3,000 hits. After he was 28. That is probably something that no one has ever done. So we remember Ichiro Suzuki. We hope that he's doing well now that he's 47. I saw him, I think, coaching the Seattle Mariners, but I could be wrong. He may not be there anymore. But that's where he made his fame, with the Seattle Mariners. Well, on this week, back in 1962, something that had a big impact in my life, the Cuban Missile Crisis. That was the time when the Soviets put missiles in Cuba and brought the world really to the brink of nuclear war. We came very close, as we now know from some of the documents. There were a couple of times when President Kennedy was being told to push the buttons. Thankfully, he didn't, and thankfully the Soviets backed down, and thankfully the crisis was resolved. Now, of course, from the standpoint of Cuba, we have a little different view of this. I was down there at the time, and many Cubans feel, correctly so, I feel, that when the United States, you know, made a deal with the Soviets to remove the missiles at the expense of Cuban freedom, and that's probably true, because when the missiles left, Castro was pretty much established, and no one, you know, the United States never again invaded Cuba or decided to change anything in Cuba. So it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell. I mean, I can certainly understand why the United States was not going to go to war with Cuba, over Cuba, that is. That wouldn't make any sense to have a nuclear war over Cuba, but there's no doubt that Fidel Castro benefited from the fact that the United States and the Soviet Union made that deal, because it pretty much preserved him as a dictator in Cuba. But anyway, it was a big day, a big week, a big month, I should say, for me and millions of others in Cuba. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Cantu in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.